Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's just 24 words, but it has one of the longest histories in U.S. congressional history. Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Known as the Equal Rights Amendment, it was introduced into every Congress from 1923 until 1972, when it was passed and sent to the states for ratification. Originally given 7 years to get the required 38 states, that deadline was extended to 10 years, but it still fell short. That failure marked the end of the ERA movement for many, but not for all. Every Congress since 1982 has seen the ERA introduced, and advocates continue to pursue strategies for its ratification. Here to explain those strategies and why some believe the ERA is needed in this day and age is Jessica Neuwirth. She's a graduate of Harvard Law School and most recently formed the ERA Coalition, which has over 50 member organizations. Ms. Neuwirth is the author of Equal Means Equal, Why the Time for an Equal Rights Amendment is Now. And Jessica, so nice to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, why has passage of this amendment proven so difficult? Because the efforts to pass it, as you point out, you know, go back decades.
Well, I actually don't think that passage will be difficult. I think what happened is, it actually, we have to remember, came very close in 1982. By the time the deadline expired, 35 out of the 38 states needed had ratified. So it was just three states. And many of the activists from that era say it was really just a handful of votes in a few legislatures that made all the difference.
And Missouri was one of those states, Jessica, just for the record. Big fight in this state.
Yeah, but, you know, that was 30, 40 years ago, and I think a lot has changed since then. What's happened in the interim, I think you mentioned, this has never really gone away, but it has kind of slipped off the radar screen. And I think most people, in fact, according to polls, 70% of the population thinks we already have the ERA in the Constitution. So it's just not something that's really been actively discussed until recently. And I do think that so much has changed that made it challenging 30, 40 years ago that really it should be kind of a no-brainer this time around. The big challenges, when you look back at them, just seem completely dated and historical.
So who's going to lead the charge these days? Who's the leader out there?
Well, that's the wonderful thing, is we don't have one leader. We have a whole generation of women and men who are veterans of the last campaign. So that's a really great leadership group for us to tap into. And then we have a whole new upcoming generation of social media activists who have tools that were never available during that first campaign. So, and then there's a group in the middle that includes me that was just a little bit too young for the last campaign but has been very involved in the women's movement for the last 20 years. And really sees the need for the ERA. So I think it's going to be a really broad-based campaign. I think so far we're just getting such a huge positive response from all quarters that it will be very much of a grassroots initiative, which is what we need.
Jessica Neuwirth is my guest. She's the author of Equal Means Equal, Why the Time for an Equal Rights Amendment is Now. You know, throughout this book, Jessica, you talk about laws that have been passed to battle sex discrimination, but you point out that an amendment that forbids it would be more permanent. How so? What's the advantage to an amendment?
Well, as you mentioned, there are a lot of laws that have been passed that are still in force, like the Pregnancy Discrimination Act from 1978 or the Equal Pay Act even from 1963. Many people are familiar with Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which covers employment discrimination on the basis of sex and other categories. But these laws have not been as effective as we would want. I think we all know the statistics. While it's true that some progress has been made, the current statistic is that on average, women make 78 cents on every dollar that a man makes in the workplace, and for women of color, it's actually much lower even. So I think that we have to just recognize that these laws have not been enough. And when you look into it more deeply, what you see is that women who have challenged pay discrimination, for example, have been frustrated in the courts, and rulings have come down under the scope of these laws where there are loopholes and there are lack of coverage of certain areas that have just made it really difficult. And I'd be happy to give you some examples, but in principle, what we need to do, instead of this kind of patchwork quilt with loopholes, we need to have a basic principle in the Constitution at the highest level of the law saying that women have equal rights. And that's what the ERA does, and all else can flow from that. And I think we will find that our legal framework will work much more effectively.
You know, in the book, when you talk about pay equity, you bring up a practice among employers that, you know, a lot of people may not know about, which involves using prior salaries to determine starting pay of a new employee. Explain the reasoning behind that and how that winds up holding women back.
Right. I mean, that's one of the loopholes I was referring
yes.
to. So in the Equal Pay Act, there's an exception for what's called factors other than sex. And one of the questions over the years in the courts has been, well, what's a legitimate factor other than sex? And in a case going back to 1982, there was a plaintiff, Lola Kuba, who sued Allstate Insurance Company because she was only making $825 a week, guaranteed minimum salary, while all of her male colleagues were making $1,000 a week. And Allstate argued in the court that that wasn't discrimination because she had been making less in her prior job than her male colleagues had earned in their prior jobs. And even though they were all doing exactly the same job, they argued it was fair to pay her less. And the court agreed with them, and her lower prior salary was found by that court to be considered a factor other than sex, one of these exceptions, which is not only in the Equal Pay Act, but also in Title VII, which prohibits wage discrimination. So this has prohibited many women since then. You can imagine if you have a lower pay to start with, you're going to always end up with a lower pay because you can never challenge it. And in 2013, much more recently, that happened, for example, in Arizona, where a woman called Tracy Rex wrote, sued the Arizona Department of Education when she learned that she was making $17,000 a year less than her male colleagues. And the court relied on that earlier case of Lola Kuba to dismiss her claim. So this is a really live problem that women are still facing when they learn that they get paid less. It's only one of many problems, in fact,
yeah.
but it's one that goes back.
You know, I'm no lawyer, but that case you just described to me, that really takes my breath away. That really surprises me that the court would rule the way it did.
Right. I think it's instinctively clear to people that if you're already behind, you'll just stay behind when you have a legal regime like that that you can't challenge.
Yeah. You know, you point out, Jessica, that the courts, specifically the U.S. Supreme Court, have handed down rulings that wind up focusing on whether intent to discriminate had been proven, never mind the negative impact that the discrimination had. What do you think was behind that approach by the courts? And when you focus on intent to discriminate, doesn't that make things a whole lot tougher for women who are bringing cases to the court?
Absolutely. I mean, the well-known case in that area is the Walmart case, where an employee named Betty Dukes brought a class action on behalf of women who worked for Walmart. And that case went on for over a decade, ending up, as you said, in the Supreme Court, where the court said that even if the statistics established a pattern of lower pay and also slower promotion in every single one of Walmart's stores, which is 3,400 stores, even if you could prove statistically that women got paid less and promoted more slowly, that would not be enough for this class action. There had to be an express policy of discrimination indicating an intent to discriminate. Now, in that case, what came out in the testimony and the evidence was this culture that they called the Walmart way. And the Walmart way was a culture that was really infused with sex discrimination, but because it wasn't in a kind of smoking gun memo, there were all these discretionary manager employment decisions, you know, they couldn't really get at it in this legal framework. And there was so much testimony of individual comments that managers had made explaining, well, women don't need as much because they don't have to support the family, or there were just so much discriminatory comments. But all of that was dismissed by the court because there wasn't a generalized policy, like literally a memo that said, please pay women less and discriminate against them. And you're never going to have that. And I think the dissent, Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the Supreme Court, did a beautiful dissent to explain that's not how discrimination works.
Yeah, yeah.
People are suddenly discriminated against, but they end up with lower pay. That's our problem.
Let me get our listeners involved here. Jessica, we're wondering if you think it's time to pass the ERA after all these years, the Equal Rights Amendment. What do you think? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You write in the chapter on pay that the courts have explicitly stated that it's not for them to roll aside all history and to take over the job of leveling out centuries of discrimination. Again, that surprises me, but how would the ERA change that?
Well, the ERA would be a tool that could be used to examine things that have been excluded by the courts. For example, I think most of us know that women are paid systematically less to watch babies than garage attendants are paid to watch cars. Now, that is something that is completely beyond the scope of the current law. And in places like Europe and Canada, there have been a lot of effort to try to use the law to address that. It's not always easy to do that, but there's a legal sense in other parts of the world that this is a violation, that it's just unfair because certain industries are dominated by women to pay them less. Now, that, as I said, has no real roots currently in U.S. law, but the ERA could be, it wouldn't necessarily be, but it could be a new tool that could be used to try to address some of these deeper practices to say that we can't just leave it to the market, because if there's discrimination, then the market will reflect that discrimination, and that is what happens. And there have been some efforts over the years to try to address that, with some very limited success, but mostly not.
In conjunction with Women's Equality Week in Kansas City, Jessica Neuwirth will be discussing her book, Equal Means Equal, at 6:30 Wednesday evening at the Kansas City Public Library, the Central Branch at 14 West 10th Street. Go to kclibrary.org for more information. Let's go to some calls at 816-235-2888. Let's go to Lisa from Kansas City, Missouri. Lisa, you're on the show.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
Thanks for taking my call. So I was really shocked to find out later in life that just because I'm a woman on paper, I haven't already been guaranteed equal rights when other groups have gone and gotten that on paper protection. And for that reason alone, I really think we need to pass this amendment.
What's your sense among your friends, your colleagues, Lisa? Is this something that ever gets talked about, or has it largely been overlooked?
It's been largely overlooked, but the reality is, I mean, maybe it's just my social situation, but almost everyone I know is in a female wage earner house. We have to make all the decisions when it comes to getting that information going, like how to support our family, even though we may have a partner. And knowing on paper that we're not guaranteed to have the exact rights that our spouse may have or our partner may have is, you know, it factors later into the conversation because we're like third wave feminists. So we just sort of assumed that our moms had already gotten all of our rights. And then to find out, wow, there's a big one still left for us to fight for.
Yeah, it's interesting because as our guest points out, Jessica Neuwirth, she says, you know, most Americans, like 70% of Americans, think the ERA already has been passed into law.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked to find out that my mom had a situation where she would have had a man sign for credit. And I was like, wow, I never have to do that. And then enter the workforce and reality and learning that, wow, I'm never going to make as much money as a man statistically, like, it's shocking. And then, you know,
yeah,
I got the education, I got the job, but really knowing that I'm not, you know, an equal, fully member of society on paper when we could have had that taken care of how many decades ago?
Yeah. Lisa, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Jessica, let's stay with this workplace idea because you bring up the point in the book that workplaces have been created around men because for centuries, you know, men were the workers. By the time women left the sphere of the home and, you know, went to work in numbers, patterns were already set. The chapter on pregnancy discrimination pretty much drives home this point. What are some of the struggles that pregnant women can face in the workplace?
Well, pregnant women, I think, really suffer a lot in the workplace. And, of course, you know, anyone could imagine that there are quite a lot of women who at some point in their life are going to be pregnant in the workplace. So as more and more women are in the workplace, it becomes a bigger problem. And just to highlight Lisa's point, I want to throw some statistics in here. For high school graduates, over the course of their careers, women will earn $700,000 on average less than men. For college graduates, it goes up to $1.2 million, and for people with an advanced degree, it's $2 million.
Wow.
So it's not a small difference that we're talking about, and pregnancy discrimination is one of the many ways like the pay discrimination that ends up hurting women in the workplace, because the workplace really was designed for what the court calls non-pregnant people. But, of course, that really means men, because most women, or many, many women, do get pregnant at some point, during their lives, and often while they're working. So there are quite a number of cases, and one that was recently decided by the Supreme Court may ring a bell. Peggy Young, who was forced out of work by UPS during her pregnancy because UPS was not legally required to give her temporary reassignment that didn't require heavy lifting. So her job, even though she didn't do a lot of heavy lifting, technically it required some heavy lifting in UPS. And in other cases, like if someone got injured on the job, or even in UPS, if someone lost their driver's license, for example, because of a drunk driving incident, they had a right to be reassigned to another job that didn't require them to drive. But in Peggy's case, because she was pregnant, she didn't have any right to any reassignment. So she was forced out of work without pay, when she needed funds during her pregnancy, and she sued, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. But historically, the Supreme Court has held that pregnancy discrimination does not constitute sex discrimination. And in their mind, at least how they expressed it in that case 30 years ago, was that men can't get pregnant. So if men can't get pregnant, then there can't be pregnancy discrimination in the workplace because it doesn't affect men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our thinking has evolved quite a lot. And the fact that the workplace doesn't serve pregnant women as well as it serves men is itself, I think, pretty evidently discriminatory and holds women back. And these are women, in some cases, there's a recent case, Doris Garcia fired by Chipotle because she took too many bathroom breaks and she needed to drink water while she was at work. For the first time in her life, she was forced to seek public assistance. These are women who want to keep working during pregnancy, but their doctors are telling them you can't lift more than 40 pounds, and then their employers are telling them, well, then you have to step down from work. They want to work. There are many other jobs, but they don't have a right to be temporarily reassigned. That's a big challenge,
yeah.
And many cases have come and gone in the courts, on that issue.
Jessica, for someone like you who's so well-schooled in the law, how do you deal with your own frustrations that we are where we are in this country, even in 2015?
Well, I think we have to remember we have made a lot of progress. That's probably why some people think we don't need more legal work. But I think, for me, what's exciting is the outreach and the organizing, and really being able to explain to people who haven't really studied this that actually there are many, many ways in which the ERA could really move us towards equality. And there's really no reason not to have it. I mean, I think we all accept the basic principle, so why not put it in our Constitution? Most countries in the world have this in their Constitution. So I think if we can just rev this campaign up, it will be a broad-based effort that will touch on so many issues that the women's movement and women in general are working on, like pregnancy discrimination and pay discrimination. I think it will, and violence against women, another area that wasn't really raised in the 70s, but equal protection of the law for women has been also very difficult. Lots of sexual violence on campus and just really terrible cases that have been thrown out of the courts. I mean, it's terrible that they've been thrown out of the courts because they're women who have been seeking justice for,
right.
I think, violence anyone thinks they should be able to get justice for.
Let me go back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Cody from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling because my mother worked for a local company for 33 years, and she was in charge of payroll. And the last decade or so that she worked there, her and the only other woman in the office were the only people that did never get a pay raise. And all the men knew it, and I'm just wondering, is it common for men around the country to not do anything about this when they find out? Because that appalls me.
Jessica?
Well, of course, the ideal, and I think more and more this is happening, is I think companies are starting, a lot of companies are starting to do their own internal review, and they're surprised to find the discrepancy. They think it's not there, and then they find it. And in the ideal situation, which happens a lot, I mean, they take steps to remedy it and make sure that everyone gets equal pay. And then for those companies that don't do that, I think what we want is some kind of a legal regime that gives women recourse so that they can bring a complaint and really try to make sure that they get paid fairly. But I think ideally, and I think more and more, companies are starting to take responsibility to look at it, because so much of it is subtle. It's not something people realize, but maybe the men ask for pay raises more so that they get them more, so then they end up with higher pay, but they're doing the same work. We just need to really be more conscious of that, and we really need to make sure that people get paid the same for the same work.
Let me go to some back to some calls. Jack from Topeka, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I was wondering if you could comment on how this law, if it, this amendment, if it's passed, will help trans rights, because so many trans discrimination is based on sexism, in that a lot of people say that supposedly trans men are they're being discriminated against because supposedly they used to be women, and trans women are being discriminated against because they're supposedly losing their power of masculinity to become women, and it's this horrible thing. And I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Yeah, transgender, the effect of the ERA on transgender individuals, Jessica.
Yeah, I mean, that's a new issue, of course, that has no history in the past campaign. In the past campaign, one of the very controversial issues was marriage equality. And at the time, people didn't even really think of it as a possibility. It was like this specter of doom. Oh, my gosh, if we have the ERA, then we're going to have marriage equality. But now, of course, we have constitutional right to marriage equality. So I think that the constitutional jurisprudence evolves over time. And it's really hard to say with a new issue like transgender specifically how that would exactly play out, because ultimately the truth is that would be up to the Supreme Court. What we're trying to do is give the Supreme Court some guidance to say we don't want to see discrimination on the basis of sex. And, you know, I think then we have to just hope that the Supreme Court, if not immediately, then over time, will recognize all of these rights as they have done with marriage equality.
Now, Jessica, I got about 30 seconds left, but give me a sense of how, what the different strategies that are out there that are going to be pursued now to make the Equal Rights Amendment a reality.
Sure. I mean, anyone can get information on both of these current strategies and actually get online and write a letter to your member of Congress at eracoalition.org. Lots of information there. But there are basically two strategies. One is we have to start all over again because the deadline expired. And that strategy is represented by a bill introduced by Carolyn Maloney, primarily with a Republican co-sponsor, Cynthia Lummis, in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one really started in the Senate, where the idea was, let's remove the deadline. You know, we didn't make it last time because of the deadline, so let's remove the deadline and try to get three more states. And that's another novel approach that that has some legal questions, but I think, you know, could certainly be a shortcut if it works legally.
Right.
And that is championed in the Senate by Senator Cardin and in the House by Jackie Speier.
Well, Jessica Neuwirth is the author of Equal Means Equal, Why the Time for an Equal Rights Amendment is Now. She speaks at 6:30 Wednesday evening at the Kansas City Public Library, the Central Branch, downtown at 14 West 10th Street. Go to kclibrary.org for more information. Jessica, thanks so much. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.